WMAL News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. The U.S. retaliates after a suicide bombing by ISIS-K in Kabul kills 13 service members.
For U.S. forces, payback. An ISIS planner killed by U.S. Reaper drone orbiting high above Nangarhar province in eastern Afghanistan. The ISIS planner killed while driving in a vehicle with an associate thought to be plotting another suicide attack on U.S. troops at the Kabul airport. Ahead of President Biden's August 31st deadline to withdraw all U.S. troops in Afghanistan, at the Pentagon, Lucas Tomlinson, Fox News.
A Maryland nonprofit helping Afghan refugees get settled here in the D.C. area.
Most of the Afghans that are coming here have what is called a family tie, so they know somebody here, or they have actual family here or a friend.
Homes Not Borders helps to supplement the basic supplies required for resettlement by the State Department.
In the kitchen, it's, you know, just basic five plates for a family, five bowls for a family.
Executive Director Laura Thompson Osuri tries to make it a welcoming home when the Afghan refugees arrive.
They're thrilled to walk into space and feel very honored and welcomed. You know, they realize that this group of Americans has created the space for them, you know, with love and everything.
Barbara Britt, WMAL and WMAL.com.
Anyone who works in Loudoun County Public Schools will have to get a COVID-19 vaccine by November 1st. The school system says in a statement the vaccine mandate is meant to keep students healthy and ensure they can go to school in person 5 days a week, even as the Delta variant surges. After October 1st, employees that haven't provided documentation of full or partial vaccination will be required to get weekly COVID-19 tests. Residents and governments along coastal Louisiana are hurrying up to prepare for Hurricane Ida.
Hurricane Ida seemed to come from nowhere and with little warning, and it will be a very dangerous cyclone as it reaches the Louisiana Gulf Coast.
We now believe that there is a strong likelihood that this will be a Category 4 hurricane at landfall.
Governor John Bel Edwards, who along with President Biden has already issued disaster declarations to muster resources and supplies. Locally, each parish is deciding whether or not to evacuate or who should stay and wait, considering the short lead time, which is making full evacuations impossible. In New Orleans, Eben Brown, Fox News.
On the 58th anniversary of MLK Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech, Washingtonians will be marching for a dream of their own today, statehood. CEO of the Douglas Commonwealth Coalition, Charles Moreland, says the Dream March is one of many today to draw attention to voting rights. It starts at Freedom Plaza at 8:30 this morning.
This is a time for us to stand up and let everybody know that those people come to D.C. Marching for freedom and justice, and when they leave, D.C. citizens are still disenfranchised.
Some argue D.C. statehood is a power grab by Democrats. And WMAL Sports, the Washington football team will host its final preseason game tonight, a battle of the beltways against the Ravens. Airtime on WMAL at 5. The Nats beat the Mets 2-1. That series continues tonight at 7:10. Traffic and weather next on WMAL. WMAL traffic, here's LBD in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
Way from Prince George's County through Montgomery County, bridge to bridge, inner loop and outer loop are at the posted speed limit. Now, if you're traveling between the two beltways, the D.C. Beltway and the Baltimore Beltway, BW Parkway and 95 are at speed northbound and southbound. Headed to the beaches, well, in Prince George's County on Route 50, between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge, eastbound lanes are at the posted speed limit, same thing on the westbound side, and at the Bay Bridge. Currently, there are two lanes headed east and three lanes coming west. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly cloudy, hot and humid again on this Saturday. Temperatures not quite as hot as the past few days, but still very warm in the upper 80s to near 90 degrees. It will feel like the mid-90s to near 100 at times. Now, as we head later on this afternoon and evening, a few isolated showers and storms will be possible, mainly west of D.C., highest likelihood along the I-81 corridor in Blue Ridge. Later on tonight, any storms will come to an end, lows back in the 70s. For your Sunday, partly cloudy skies, some stray afternoon storms, highs near 90 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on 105.9 FM, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
Now, from the WMAL WinBet Studios, the Saturday morning update.
It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by John Gizzi. He is the White House correspondent and chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Rick.
The eyes of the nation and the eyes of the world have been on the White House and the White House briefing room over the past 2 weeks. What are your key observations at the end of this week?
If there was any honeymoon between the White House press corps and the Biden administration, symbolized by Press Secretary Jen Psaki, it underwent a very, very bad breakup this past week. It seemed as though the press was cutting a lot of slack with the White House on getting home the Americans who were still left in Afghanistan. Yes, the Taliban took over. The previous government fled, in many cases giving U.S. arms back. The picture's presenting a scene that was unpleasant to most Americans. As one commentator put it, Saigon in 1975 on steroids. That said, it was still hoped that the airlift of Americans out of Afghanistan and putting America's longest war behind us would be accomplished. All of those hopes were dashed as we came closer to the August 31st deadline, and on Thursday, just 2 days ago, we saw what happened at Abbey Gate that resulted in the death of 13 Americans in uniform. Now, of course, we're wondering, are we going to get all Americans out? What is the strategy? Who was responsible for us staying there so long where we would be targets for whomever oversaw the bombing? The Taliban said it had nothing to do with it, and speculation centers on ISIS-K, K standing for Khashran or the Caliphate, that stretches through Asia and the Middle East. This is the Islamic State that envisions a complete takeover that would take that part of the world back to the 5th century. One thing is certain. The administration says now that there's likely to be more bombings next week as we approach the August 31st deadline for getting out of Afghanistan. And it's expected there's going to be even more violence after that as we come closer to September 11th, the 20th anniversary of 9/11.
John, you've been at the White House since the president was inaugurated.
Yes.
Have you been hearing much about Afghanistan, the exit of our troops, of our embassy people, of our citizens? Have you heard much about it prior to, say, the last 2 weeks when we were all of a sudden up on the deadline? I mean, in June, were they talking about progress? Was it anything mentioned about this in their briefings?
Minimal. And if it was, it was forgettable. Look, White House spokeswoman Jen Psaki made it clear repeatedly that the president's deadline of August 31st was much longer than that established by the former president, or as they refer to Donald Trump. In addition, the question was whether Americans would be out for the 31st, but people started to have second thoughts as 10 provincial capitals and then Kabul itself all fell to the Taliban. It was then that people said, hey, we've got Americans who are still there. And then on Thursday, August 25th, it seemed that this issue was first and foremost thrust into the minds of those who cover the White House, and that's all they were asking about then. Quite a change in a two-week period.
It seems like they didn't go to class for the whole semester, and two nights before the exam, they start to cram.
You said it and not me, but that's about where it is. And if you just read the transcripts or watch the briefings with Jen Psaki and my colleagues and me, you will see the questions begin to radically grow when it comes to Afghanistan and Americans in just the past 2 weeks, whereas they were minimal, if not invisible, before that.
John, there are other things going on in politics on Capitol Hill. Legislation passed this week in the House. What was it, and where does it go next?
You're talking about the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, named after the late lion of the civil rights movement, Congressman Lewis of Georgia. This is one that would enhance federal control over elections and, in the process, restore many of the teeth in the Voting Rights Act that were firmly implanted in the legislation when it passed in 1965 and was used to combat those who had authority over elections, who were dedicated to keeping black Americans from voting. All that is ancient history, Republicans say. The southern states are very much in line and not keeping anyone from voting. Democrats say this is not true and say that Republican efforts, notably the Voter ID Act, are designed to depress the voting by minorities. The answer is a strong federal hand, such as that that was used in the 1960s to finally get blacks voting in the South. Now, that said, it passed along strict party lines in the House of Representatives, and it will go to the Senate, where only one Republican so far has said he favors the John Lewis Voting Act. This means the F word, which on Capitol Hill is filibuster, is going to be heard soon. This reporter predicts the John Lewis Voting Rights Act will not see the light of day and will not be going to the president's desk for a signature.
One note in a decision at the Supreme Court involving the president's desire to extend the moratorium on evictions. What happened and where does that go next, if anywhere?
Simply put, the Supreme Court ruled 6-3 that an executive order banning evictions was unconstitutional. Now, this upset many Democrats on Capitol Hill. Congressman Hakeem Jeffries of New York, the number three Democrat in their House leadership, said flatly, the Supreme Court has lost all credibility. Spokeswoman Jen Psaki was not saying that at the White House, but in respectfully disagreeing with the court's decision, she pointed out that the justices said that it was up to Congress and not the president to provide for the legislation that would ban evictions. She says it hasn't happened, so the administration is appealing to governors to use money from the American Rescue Act and any other resources to keep people from being evicted. We're going to hear a lot about this as time goes on because this was a key promise of Joe Biden in the last campaign, and now the justices said he's got to do it another way.
One note to stick up for the Supreme Court. After the things that Congressman Jeffries said during the Trump impeachment trials, he lost all his credibility months ago.
Some say that.
Well, let's move out west, John. 2 weeks from Tuesday, it is the California voters deciding whether to recall Democratic Governor Gavin Newsom and replace him with one of several Republicans that are on the ballot as well. What's the latest? The leading contender hit a little turbulence.
Well, that is true. But let's deal with Governor Newsom first. Polls show that it's almost neck and neck on whether Golden State voters will say thumbs up or thumbs down to Governor Newsom. It's 50-50 in most cases. If 50+1% say Newsom goes, then the voters go to a list on the ballot of alternate governors. Democrats, for the most part, put all their chips on Newsom and are trying to rescue him. The White House said on Wednesday that the president would go to California to campaign for Newsom. He may be having second thoughts about that at this point. Meanwhile, most of the substantive candidates who could replace Newsom are Republicans, and the front runner, backed by most of the Republican organization and having the most money at this point, is Larry Elder, popular radio talk show host, and someone we would call a shock jock for his observations on things. At least he's a shock jock in California. He thinks climate change is a canard. He is pro-life. He's been highly critical of immigration and the efforts to keep illegal immigrants out. He's been called a racist at times, but this is a little difficult. Larry Elder is black. He did take some flack recently when his former fiance said he smoked marijuana and pointed a loaded gun at her. She said he's a dangerous person who shouldn't be near the governorship. Elder dismissed this, and he said that it wasn't true, and this was just a disgruntled former girlfriend. Most Republicans agreed with him on that. Sean Steele, the Republican National Committee man from California, told me that these last-minute attacks usually don't work. They tried it on Arnold Schwarzenegger when he was the winner of a recall election 18 years ago. It didn't work. Donald Trump's Access Hollywood tape is well known, and he went on to be president. Steele says Elder will not be impacted by this. I might add Larry Elder has so far raised $10 million, more than any other Republican in the race, and that includes the famous Caitlyn Jenner. And if there's going to be a replacement, it's likely to be the talk show king, as he calls himself, the sage of South Central, Larry Elder. We'll find out in 2 weeks.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. Follow him on Twitter at John Gizzi. As always, John, thank you so much.
Rick, it's never boring. Let's put it that way.
7:20 Saturday morning update. WMAL, LBDs in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In Virginia, on the outer loop of the Beltway, traffic is slow in McLean between the express lanes and the Dulles Toll Road. No reports of any slowdowns on the inner loop of the Beltway in Virginia. On 66 in Fairfax County, no crashes and no construction eastbound or westbound. On 95 between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, you're clear on the northbound side and on the southbound side. In D.C., 295, 395, and 695 are at the posted speed limit. 3rd Street Tunnel, though, southbound, that's still closed between New York Avenue and Massachusetts Avenue. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly cloudy, hot and humid again on this Saturday. Temperatures not quite as hot as the past few days, but still very warm in the upper 80s to near 90 degrees. It will feel like the mid-90s to near 100 at times. Now, as we head later on this afternoon and evening, a few isolated showers and storms will be possible, mainly west of D.C., highest likelihood along the I-81 corridor in Blue Ridge. Later on tonight, any storms will come to an end, lows back in the 70s. For your Sunday, partly cloudy skies, some stray afternoon storms, highs near 90 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Lee at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
73 degrees, 7:21 in the nation's capital on WMAL.
Start your day the right way with news, politics, entertainment, and maybe even a laugh. O'Connor and Company, every day, 5 to 9 a.m. on WMAL.
The Saturday morning update continues. I'm Rick Fowler, and the Delta variant, COVID-19, continues to dominate in the headlines. We're joined once again by Dr. Bob Lajita. He is the director of the St. Joseph's Institute of Autoimmune and Rheumatic Diseases, professor of medicine at Hackensack Meridian School of Medicine, and clinical professor of medicine at the Rutgers, New Jersey Medical School. Dr. Lajita, great to have you back with us.
Thanks, Rick. It's a delight to be with you again.
It's back to school time, and there have been major debates in school board meetings around the country, and I wanted to get your recommendations for parents as they will be sending their kids back to school, your thoughts when it comes to masks and vaccinations.
Well, I think parents, Rick, are very close to their kids insofar as they understand the social needs for children, especially those below the age of 12, to have relationships with their classmates. Socialization is part of development, and socialization is to be encouraged. We know now that children rarely, and I say rarely, there are exceptions to the rule, rarely get very sick from the Delta variant or, in fact, the virus itself. So we can say for sure that trying to keep a mask on a youngster below the age of 12 is going to be somewhat difficult. And in some school systems, they're demanding it. It's very complex. I am more concerned, to be frank, about teachers and ancillary personnel. Teachers should be vaccinated. And as you know, in Philadelphia and in New York City, there's a mandate from the city politicians, I guess the mayor et al., that teachers should be mandated to be vaccinated because they can get the virus from the child who is maybe totally asymptomatic, and or they can give the vaccine to the child. In rare instances, a child will get ill. Now, by ill, I mean the multi-system inflammatory syndrome, which is quite severe but survivable. It's not a death sentence for the child. It's just a pain for the parent and the child if the child gets very sick. Rarely, there may be an immunodeficiency that nobody knows about, or there may be an inborn error of immunity, which means that the immune system of the child may not react normally to a virus. And that is only found out when the child gets infected. So the complexity of the issue, you see the complexity. The social distancing thing is ridiculous. You can't keep kids apart, you know, 3-6 feet apart unless you chain them to their desks. That's number one. Number two, whether they should wear a mask or not is kind of ridiculous because children, especially from the ages like kindergarten up to the eighth grade, they're not going to be very cooperative as far as wearing a mask. Plus, it's also very confining to kids. So I'm not so sure I would worry so much about the children as I would the teachers and ancillary staff in the schools.
There have been a lot of debates in politics across the country about whether to enforce mask mandates in general, whether to even think about mandating vaccinations. Many employers are doing it already. I got to thinking that people may have made up their minds about masks and vaccinations last year when they saw how the spread was being reported, when they saw things started to calm down a little bit. What do they need to understand about the Delta variant? And I know you've written an article for Psychology Today, what's going on in the minds of those with vaccine hesitancy. So maybe,
right,
you know, you've already written about that, I guess, in the article, but what do they need to understand about the difference between the Delta variant and what we saw last year?
Well, first of all, the Delta variant is this variant or mutation from India that is highly infective, about 6 times more transmissible. Actually, the article from the medical journal, JAMA, Journal of the American Medical Association, says it's 60% more transmissible than the original Alpha variant. And the CDC is the group that has suggested at least basic reproduction rate is 5 to 8 times more than the original Alpha variant, which means it's extremely infective. And it's like being in the same room. You don't even have to cough on somebody to pass it on to the other person. You just have to be there and exchanging the same gases, if you will. So it is pretty transmissible. It's very infective. And I think it's quite dangerous, especially to those who have comorbidities. And those, you remember, Rick, we talked about diabetes, severe diabetes, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, congestive heart failure. And you don't have to be above the age of 65 to have those comorbidities. So it's very, very dangerous. So here's what I suggest. If you're vaccinated, and I know we're going after and we will be talking about a suppressing third dose, but if you're vaccinated, you can probably not have to wear your mask outside, but in a room where you have people that you do not know, even on the honor system, if they tell you they're vaccinated, they may not be. You don't want to trust them. Because this Delta variant is really pretty deadly. Now, the problem here with those who are hesitant, that it's basically made up of three things. I say the three C's: confidence, complacency, and convenience. Confidence means that you don't believe the vaccine works, or some people don't even believe the virus exists. The vaccine does work. It's been FDA approved, and those of you in Washington who work at the FDA or part of the FDA know how comprehensive and thorough those committees are. So, yes, it does work. Yes, it is safe. Yes, you should take it. The second thing is complacency, saying, oh, well, why am I going to take this vaccine? This Delta variant infects people who are vaccinated. That's true. There are breakthrough infections. There are also people who get these infections who have comorbidities and don't do well, even after being vaccinated. And then there's that 5 to 10%, which we told people about, you know, the vaccine's only effective 90 to 95% of the time. And then there are those people whose immune systems are incompetent and nobody knows about them until you get in the hospital and we test you. And so complacency is not the position to take. That is bad. The third thing is convenience. Well, you know, they said, we're not going to get it. We can't go. We can't get it. Nobody's offering it. It's not free. Yes, it is free. And yes, you can get it in a drugstore like Walgreens or CVS. And I don't know why doctors can't give it yet, but in my office, I have people asking for the vaccine all the time, and I cannot administer it. It's not available to physician offices or institutes or even university hospitals except to give to their own staff. And so the three C's are things that you have to consider. But social media has done a number on everybody when they actually believe the things that they're hearing. And it's the old adage, don't believe everything you hear, don't believe everything you read. Be your own judge of what's correct.
Everyone's talking about prevention, but what's the latest on treatment when it comes to COVID-19 and the Delta variant?
Treatment has not changed except to understand that if you're sick and you go to the emergency room, we are now giving monoclonal antibodies to patients who are quite ill. And that works. The monoclonal antibody can be given to you in the emergency room, you can go home. And you can relax. So that's an added treatment. But we're basically treating the coronavirus the same way we did a year ago with remdesivir and low-dose heparin and baby aspirin. By the way, I advise everybody to take a baby aspirin because the microemboli are very important if you do get infected. And that's about it. And supportive therapy, lots of fluids, lots of care, tender, loving care from your loved ones.
Well, you've been sharing your knowledge with us here on WMAL for over a year now, and I understand that you have a book coming out in October?
Yeah, right. It's mid-October to early November, and the book is called Immunity Strong. You can find all you want to know about vaccines, the virus, bacteria, your biomes, alternative medications, real medications to take to preserve your immune system. And I joke about living beyond 100, but if you take care of your immune system, which, by the way, Rick, I call the biological soul, because it is your biological soul, takes over your entire body. Without it, you cannot function. You cannot exist. That book will be coming out. It's written for the layman. It'll be out mid to late October, early November.
And that covers immunity in general, not just specifically toward coronavirus.
That's right. Immunity in general, because coronavirus hopefully will not be uncontrolled forever. And this book is something that can give you a lot of pointers for a healthy life going forward.
We will look forward to seeing that in the next month and a half or so. Dr. Bob Lahita, once again, thank you very much for being with us this morning.
Thanks, Rick. It's a pleasure.
News is next on WMAL, then back with Tony Schaefer and KT McFarland.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. America's reopening. Hear it here. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus station. News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. Some New Orleans residents are under a mandatory evacuation this morning as Hurricane Ida barrels towards Louisiana. Mayor LaToya Cantrass says the storm's moving so quickly that everyone can't leave the city, but people in a section outside the levee system are being told to get out now. Forecasters say Ida could grow to an extremely dangerous Category 4 storm when it nears the coast late tomorrow. An ISIS planner is killed in a U.S. drone strike in Afghanistan.
Less than 48 hours after that deadly suicide attack that killed 13 American service members and wounded 20 others and killed over 160 Afghans, the U.S. military has struck back, launching a drone strike in eastern Afghanistan's Nangarhar province. President Biden just a few days ago said he will hunt down and kill whoever's responsible for this attack.
Fox's Lucas Tomlinson. 58 years ago today, MLK Jr. gave his iconic I Have a Dream speech on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. Today, thousands of voting rights advocates are expected to march to the memorial. Some are with the Dream March.
We are having our rally start at Freedom Plaza because D.C. statehood is our dream.
CEO of the Douglas Commonwealth Coalition, Charles Moreland, says he'll start gathering at 8:30. WMAL Sports, the Washington football team, will host its final preseason game tonight, a battle of the Beltway against the Ravens. Airtime on WMAL is 5. The Nats beat the Mets 2-1. Traffic and weather next. WMAL traffic, here's LBD in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
Good morning. Here's the latest traffic update I have for you on the Maryland side of the Beltway. Prince George's County and in Montgomery County. No crashes and no construction. All lanes are clear and at speed on the inner loop and on the outer loop. In Montgomery County on 270 between the Beltway and Frederick, no delays on the northbound side and on the southbound side. And going to the beaches in Prince George's County on Route 50 between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge, no delays on the eastbound side and on the westbound side at the Bay Bridge. You got two lanes headed east and three lanes coming west. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly cloudy, hot and humid on this Saturday. High temperatures around the 90-degree mark. It will feel like the mid to upper 90s. We'll have the chance for a few isolated storms, mainly west of D.C., not as widespread as your Friday. Heading overnight, partly cloudy, lows back in the 70s. It'll be warm and muggy as we start your Sunday. Still hot for the afternoon, highs around 90 degrees with some isolated storms. Also, we are tracking Hurricane Ida, expected to make landfall as a Category 4 hurricane into southern Louisiana late Sunday evening. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on WMAL.
It's the Saturday morning update on WMAL. We're joined by Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, author of Operation Dark Heart and the president of the London Center for Policy Research. Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Always great to join you.
Thank you. Drone strike last night. U.S. takes out ISIS planner. Tell us about it.
So this apparently was the Nangarhar province, which is the stronghold for this ISIS-K. ISIS-K, for those who don't know, is essentially a derivative, a breakaway group of the Pakistani Taliban. So it's another version of Taliban, just rebranded. And these guys are the most vicious group. The Afghan Taliban is its enemy. These folks aren't technically friends at all. This strike actually happened, Rick, over in Nangarhar province. It was supposedly against one of the key leaders who planned the attack against Kabul and the airport. And ironically, it's actually in the same district as Tora Bora, where a lot of this started 20 years ago. And so far, I haven't been able to confirm any of the details through my sources, but according to official sources, they were able to take this person out in the small village not too far from the border with Pakistan.
That is a big plus for the U.S. at this point. It's been a tough couple of weeks. And one thing I wanted to ask you about, you know a lot of people in the military. The president has been talking about a unanimity of strategy and that everybody agreed with this strategy he's taken. What are you hearing on that topic?
No. Look. The one constant of the comments from Joe Biden is lies. That is an absolute lie. I've talked to senior officers. I've spent some time meeting with people face to face. And the idea that there was unanimity is beyond insane. There were specific political objectives which they wanted, and the tactical limitations they assigned to the Pentagon would not permit effective protection, effective strikes, effective military overwatch. It was all vetoed. So what he's saying has absolutely no relevance to the reality which others have provided inputs and recommendations. Secondly, the intelligence has always been there. Experts, as myself, have been talking in good detail about what to expect, when to expect it, and it's happened. So I'm certain that people on the inside are giving the very same advice, but with a lot more detail that would provide the president specific options to act. So, again, let me be very clear on this. There is no unanimity. There is a great deal of dissent within the policy, both at the beginning of it, the middle of it, and the execution of it. And at this point, there's still issues with, for example, the strike against ISIS-K. There were strong recommendations to do a massive attack, not just a pinprick, not just one, but actually go after the entire infrastructure to set the tone. Because one of the things that Milley, General Milley has even said himself, that left unaddressed, you're going to see a rapid and extensive expansion of ISIS-K and ISIS organizations in Afghanistan because of the ungoverned space, which is essentially ready to, we're seeing it right now. So there is not unanimity. I can't even believe he said that.
For about 10 days or so, we kept hearing that the estimated number of Americans in Afghanistan was somewhere between 10 and 14,000.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, midweek, it dropped down to 6,000, and there were only 1,000 left to get out. How did those numbers change that drastically midweek?
They're lying. Again, I can't put any soft terms on it. The people I speak to are estimating that there's still 15,000 all throughout Afghanistan. And the fact is, and others have assessed this beyond myself, and there's been bipartisan members of Congress, Seth Moulton, who I've met, and I think he's a Democrat, he's got good integrity, has been there and understands that the number of people who are trying to get to the airport to be evacuated is nowhere near the number they're putting out. One of the great flaws, Rick, that they did is they gave this list of individuals to the Taliban that they want to try to get out. My sources are telling me people on that list are being detained or otherwise prevented from getting to the airport for the very reason that once you're identified as a U.S. citizen or someone who helped us, the Taliban is not going to be that helpful. So part of the challenge has been the moment the White House did that, they made the job of recovering people an order of magnitude harder to do. And this is something that I believe must be investigated because I have never heard of a U.S. State Department giving a declared terrorist organization specific targeting information on U.S. citizens. This is unheard of. And again, my sources are telling me it's made things much worse.
Okay, so we're going to be completely out, maybe not the 31st, maybe the 31st, but we will be completely out soon. So what happens if we have to go back in?
Well, the retrograde is what they're calling it, is going to continue. And the idea is that they will continue, they will stop recovery operations of citizens on the 31st. I believe, Rick, and I'm going on record, obviously, publicly, I believe we're still going to have between 10-15,000 on the ground somewhere that they're going to have to go back and get, plus specific, I think, very aggressive targets of ISIS now re-blooming, re-getting ready to try to start striking out, getting into Afghanistan to train. So I think we're going to have to be back in there before the end of September. I think there's going to have to be military operations, special operations primarily, as well as some level of strike before October if the president actually authorizes effective use of military force. I don't think we're going to reinvade. I think that would be insane. But there's going to be specific targets that are going to come up. There's going to be pockets of individuals who are not rescued, and it's going to become a PR nightmare for this administration if they don't try to stay ahead of it and try to do what they're actually being recommended to do by the military as we go into September.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. And, Tony, want to refer folks to your podcast at londoncenter.org. Tony, thank you so much as always.
Great. Thank you, Rick.
My pleasure. 7:44 Saturday morning update. KT McFarland next. Al BD's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In D.C., 3rd Street Tunnel southbound still closed and will continue to be closed until further notice between New York Avenue and Massachusetts Avenue. Northbound side of the 3rd Street Tunnel, you shouldn't find any delays. On 295, 395, and 695 in the district, all the lanes are at the posted speed limit. Now on to the Virginia side of the Beltway. I'm looking in the cameras. I'm not seeing any crashes. No construction has been set up. All lanes on the inner loop and outer loop are at speed. On 66 in Fairfax County, it's clear, eastbound and westbound. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly cloudy, hot and humid again on this Saturday. Temperatures Not quite as hot as the past few days, but still very warm in the upper 80s to near 90 degrees. It will feel like the mid-90s to near 100 at times. Now, as we head later on this afternoon and evening, a few isolated showers and storms will be possible, mainly west of D.C., highest likelihood along the I-81 corridor in Blue Ridge. Later on tonight, any storms will come to an end, lows back in the 70s. For your Sunday, partly cloudy skies, some stray afternoon storms, highs near 90 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
73 degrees in the nation's capital, 746, the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
The Saturday morning update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. KT McFarland traveling this morning, but we spoke with her last night prior to the U.S. drone strike that did take out the planner of the ISIS-K organization. KT, of course, the former deputy national security advisor in the Trump administration, and she also held national security posts in the Ford and Reagan administrations, as well as working with Dr. Henry Kissinger in the Nixon administration. My first question to KT, the future of the Biden administration, and can the Biden administration recover from these past 2 weeks and the chaos in the exit out of Afghanistan?
No, not at all. I mean, his presidency is finished. I used to think he was like the Jimmy Carter president, but it's a lot worse than that. He's like the Neville Chamberlain president, the man who famously underestimated Adolf Hitler and plunged the world into World War II. But, you know, Biden's not alone. Our military and political leaders have failed us for decades. You know, how many times did the generals trot up to Capitol Hill, always promising victory was right around the corner, all they needed was a few more billion dollars, a couple more months, maybe a year or so, a few thousand more American soldiers, and victory would be great. We built this modern Afghan military, and it would defeat the Taliban, et cetera. And the same thing can be said of our political leaders who kept saying, well, we're going to nation build. We're going to make sure that Afghanistan is a strong democracy and Al-Qaeda and the terrorists will never come back. And our intelligence community, I mean, they failed everybody. They never saw Al-Qaeda in the first place in 2001, and they never saw what was happening in Afghanistan today, and frankly, they missed everything in between. So I've got a real gripe with all of our leaders, but most particularly with President Biden.
Well, he is committed to get Americans out, even after we leave the country. I'm not quite sure what magic trick he's going to use to do that. But what do you see as next in Afghanistan?
Well, I think it only gets worse from our perspective. We are leaving Americans behind. Our military is going to have to shoot their way out. There are reports that there will be warnings that there will be additional terrorist attacks for the next couple of days as we attempt to leave, and I'm sure there will be. You know, the Taliban and their Al-Qaeda and ISIS pals, they've got to be celebrating in the streets. What a great terrorist attack they had against Americans. I mean, they think this was a super success, so I'm sure there'll be more terrorist attacks. I do think that there'll be hostages, especially as we leave Americans behind, and our military will have to shoot their way out. I mean, look, the tragic mistakes that they made, just unmistakable, one after another, extraordinarily stupid things that they did. Just one example, closing Bagram Air Base. By doing so, they released probably 5,000 ISIS Al-Qaeda terrorists who were held in jails in Bagram. And they let them loose into Afghanistan rather than taking them out beforehand and putting them in Guantanamo Bay or someplace else. We have now created, we have allowed to happen, a whole new terrorist threat against the United States that wasn't there before. And it was our own fault through our own just complete incompetence. I mean, Afghanistan, I think, going forward, descends into a multi-sided civil war. You know, today it looks like, oh, they're the Taliban, they're all united. Look, there are like five different Talibans, and they usually are fighting each other most of the time. And we now see that there's this new ISIS-K, which is a whole other group of terrorists inside Afghanistan. But again, we've created now, through President Biden's just unbelievable incompetence, we have now created an anti-American terrorist unit that was not there before. I don't mind if Afghanistan falls into a multi-sided civil war. They keep each other busy in the territory. But I'm worried that now those people, the bad guys, come after us one more time.
In your position as Deputy National Security Advisor, you probably dealt with some of the key military leaders that we see in there now. Would they have been that blind to make these mistakes, or is it possible that they laid out a plan and they said keep Bagram open and basically walked through some of the things you just walked through, but the president overruled them? How does that work?
I think most people feel that the current generation of senior military leadership is the worst in decades. And remember, a lot of the senior military people today were the people who were promoted and put in positions on the fast track to leadership in the Obama administration. And they were promoted not because of their warfighting capabilities. They were promoted because they were woke, they were politically correct. And I keep thinking of the report that came out several weeks ago about the United States Navy and the surface fleet, of how because of the woke agenda taking up so much of their time and energy and effort and training, that our military, our Navy, was probably ill-equipped to deal with the Chinese Navy, because instead of emphasizing winning battles and warfighting, they were so wrapped up in politics and the woke agenda. And I think that explains the current political generals, I think, that are running the United States military. But even so, President Biden, I mean, he'll say it's all the military's fault. The military will say it's all President Biden's fault. So here we are yet again, where we're not sure whose fault it is, but everybody looks pretty incompetent. And I guess this is the thing that is so upsetting, Rick, is that whatever else you might have said about America in the last 150 years, everyone thought of us as the can-do nation, the guys who could really figure things out. We were always thought of being extremely capable and talented, and the people who were just competent. And this is just stunning incompetence. And so my worry is that this is the inflection point. Certainly it's the inflection point of the Biden presidency. Again, I don't think he ever recovers, nor should he. But will it be that, will we look back 10 years from now, will we look back at this period and say, gee, that was the inflection point. That was the turning point. America, that was the end of American power. It marked the downward and irretrievable descent of American power. I don't think it will, but only if we have major course corrections in United States policy and a whole new set of leaders as fast as we can. I mean, I look at the 2022 election, and if a Democrat gets elected dog catcher anywhere in the country, I think it's a big mistake that the Republicans need to take back the House and the Senate and just put the leash on the Biden incompetence. And secondly, in 2024, we need to elect a very different kind of leader. No more of this Democrat or Republican establishment where it's the go-along, get-along guys who just perpetuate this stunning incompetence and lack of moral leadership and character. You know, I just wish once we could see an American president who would come out and admit the obvious and take ownership of it. Instead, it's always about blaming somebody else. That, you know, we tried our hardest, but things could never have happened differently, or I really feel empathetic about this, but come on, guys. I don't care how hard you try. I want to see results, and I want to see people with enough personal courage and backbone to do the right thing, even if it's not the right thing politically.
KT, some of the messaging out of the White House these past 2 weeks has been so troubling in terms of just positioning us in terms of making us look so weak. I mean, we're working under a Taliban deadline, and I just don't understand how we can project such weakness when we need to be projecting strength. I mean, how does that look around the world?
Well, you're absolutely right, and it's a fundamental rule of foreign policy that if your adversaries sense weakness and confusion and disarray, that's when they make their move. I expect China will make a move in the South China Sea, a move against Taiwan, maybe not a military move, but a move nonetheless, and exploit the fact that the Biden administration is just at just a complete chaos right now. The other thing is that if you look at not just Afghanistan and the incompetence of this, but it's how many other times has President Biden just been begging countries, right? So he shuts down the American energy independence, and the American energy industry cancels the Keystone Pipeline, but then he begs the Arab oil producers in the Middle East to pump more oil so that it keeps the price down. The Russians cyber attack and hack American industry, and what does he do? He begs the Russians, don't attack us, don't go after these 17 critical infrastructure industries, not mentioning the fact that industry 18 on up are going to then be open season on them. I mean, he's begging the Taliban to help provide security as we evacuate Afghanistan. He's begged the Chinese, you know, the Chinese come and they insult the Americans at every international meeting, and what do our leaders do? They apologize to the Chinese, you know, or they make excuses. It's like we've all of a sudden assumed the ultimate beta dog position in every international engagement we have, and that just invites more and more and more exploitation on the part of our adversaries. You know, there's a reason people say peace through strength is the right policy, and that's because if you are strong, your adversaries don't attack you. If you are perceived to be weak is when they all go in for the kill, and that's where we are now.
K.T. McFarland, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. She has written two opinion pieces at foxnews.com on Afghanistan recently, so we point you in that direction. K.T., thank you so much as always.
Pleasure and an honor.
And an honor to have you, KT. It is 7:56. It is the Saturday morning update. We've got the news coming up next at 8 o'clock. Then it's Garden Sense. Stay with us.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. America's reopening. Hear it here. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus station.